me and my ego. We use the word ego quite often. Please understand this is not a Freudian or psychological explanation. The concept of ego here is an expression of your limited, separate self. Your ego is an important part of your vehicle here on Earth. One of the major tasks of your ego is to establish a sense of individuality. And although that is a necessary piece of development, it can cause some difficulties. When you begin to make distinctions between yourself and others, you create a distance. Even your language creates a sense of separation. The simple use of the words me and you create a divide. It is not surprising that the three most important words in a two-year-old's vocabulary are no, me, and mine. This is the time in development when the sense of individuality is consciously expressed, and with it, a sense of separation. Your ego also represents your personality and all the different roles you play in life. Because the ego is responsible for your sense of individuality, your ego also lives with a certain amount of isolation. The ego, by its nature, has a difficult time seeing beyond itself. And because of its contracted vision and understanding, it experiences other individuals as threatening. It lives in either a constant state of overblown self-importance or dramatically exaggerated unimportance. It is either saying, hey, pay attention to me, or nobody loves me, nobody ever could love me. The ego can also be viewed as a primitive part of the self. It is an extension of our early evolutionary protection that has become part of our human condition. Imagine you are a little animal trying to survive here on planet Earth. You need to be constantly vigilant. If you are not wary, then something will swoop down and gobble you up. You need to be totally self-conscious. As soon as you start thinking about someone else, you will be distracted and stepped on and or eaten. The little ego that is a part of you that carries with it these same characteristics. Your ego is not a bad thing. It is just limited in its understanding of what is. When your thinking becomes distorted, you think your ego is all that you are. Because the ego is so self-protective by nature, it perceives most other egos as a threat. Even in the most benign of situations, egos can come in conflict with one another. For example, after a child is born and for some time afterward, in most average loving homes, there is a sense of wonder and reverence around the new baby. The most insignificant things, such as pooping, sneezing, and smiling, are looked upon with exaggerated excitement. But after 6 months or so, the task of changing diapers, feeding, and cleaning up begin to produce a bit of ennui or resentment. You might know you should not feel that way, but you do. Why couldn't he have just waited until I got the diaper on before he peed? We're all out of baby cereal. Now I have to go to the store again. I wish you were eating more solid food. Little by little, what was wonderful begins to become, sometimes, abrasive. Of course, there is some natural newness that wears off. But another thing that is happening here is that the child is developing its own ego. The baby is forming its own identity, and the child's ego is beginning to rub against mom and dad's egos. When egos meet, they inevitably clash. So the question arises again, how did we begin to get so lost in our ego consciousness? Our model continues to illustrate the process of our earthly development and offers some idea about our increasing identification with our ego and its limited perceptions. We begin to move from the integrated state of our soul's power being predominant over the ego to a stage of exploration and experimentation. Imagine the ego, which is linked to our intellect and our five senses, as a little craft that sets out to investigate the physical world. Again, presuming a relatively loving environment, the exploring ego finds the world a fairly safe and comfortable place. When you are cold, you get covered. When you are hungry, you get fed. When you are thirsty, you are given something to drink. When you cry, someone holds you. People training. Then a little further on in life, when this little unidentified or undefined self goes out into the world to explore and discover who it is, one of the first things it bumps into are other people. All these other people who are almost totally identified with their own ego consciousness start telling you who you are. The paradox is that none of them know who they are, but they are experts on you. This stage of development is sometimes referred to as people training. Everyone is telling you who you are and how you should act. They are even telling you what you are going to be when you grow up. All these voices are informing you, you're a nice boy or a nice girl, or you look just like your father, I love you when you giggle, you're going to be a teacher just like me when you grow up. On and on, they never stop. Because you are like a little sponge at this period of your life, little by little you take in these messages and begin to hold on to them. All these things other people are telling you become your idea of who you are. You become identified with all these roles you play, and you are taught to especially identify with your behavior. You become good or bad. Your identity becomes dependent on what you do. You begin to lose track of who you really are. As you experience life in this way, you move further away from the truth that you are made in the image and likeness of God. You moved more away from a sense of identity with your spiritual nature and oneness with God. You experienced yourself as more and more separate. These ego-related messages come from all sorts of people in charge, from your parents, priests, ministers, and teachers. Like most children, you assume all these authority figures must know what they are talking about. They must be right. Despite the power of these many negative and limiting messages, you might have still been aware of a sense inside of yourself that whispered all this egotistic information was not correct. Even after being bombarded with people training ideas, many still have a deep feeling of spirituality and the presence of God. Even if the words were not there, you might have discovered that you still strongly believed and knew you were unconditionally loved. Powerful inner critics, spawned from all this people training, objected to these wonderful and healing beliefs. They would say such things as, "How could you be a lovable child of God if you displeased your parents? You didn't obey all the rules. You doubted what the minister told you." And on and on. The list of objections to unconditional love and life in the spirit was endless. You learned, "I am bad because I talked in school. Getting all A's is not enough. I need to be sure to get all A's next time. I upset my mother, so there is something wrong with me." And so on. You have all of this external negativity coming from so many of the authority figures in your life. It is not difficult to understand how that spiritual truth inside of you, that you are a blessed child of God, became fainter and more distant. Soon your education broadens, and now you are not only influenced by the voices at home, but also of church and school. Most of your schools put their emphasis on your intellect, which is aligned with your ego. Your church community places a lot of emphasis on your behavior. Even though you might not hear it spoken in words, the message, "You are what you do," comes across loud and clear. If you have done something wrong, you hear, "You are a bad boy or a bad girl." It is fascinating when reading the Gospels to discover the people Jesus had the most problems with were the scribes and the Pharisees. These were the teachers of the law, the keepers of the letter of the law. They lived by the rule, "You are what you do." In challenging them, Jesus was saying, in effect, "No, you are much more than what you do. What is inside of you is much more important than what is outside. God will not judge your negative actions if you are willing to change. The Spirit of God is within you." For most of us, however, there was a constant barrage of messages that made no distinction in your mind between your behavior and who you are as a person. Probably no one knew how to help you distinguish between you and your behavior. It usually turns out, when you did something to displease someone, that you were a bad boy, you were a brat, you were a liar, or a cheat. Inevitably, there was something wrong with you. Consider how different it would have been if you had grown up with the messages, "You are a marvelous child of God, and you just did something unacceptable, and I love you just as much as I did a moment ago." Or, "I don't like what you did, but I want to let you know that nothing can interfere with my love for you, and certainly nothing can interfere with God's unconditional love for you." If these beliefs were spoken and assimilated, even by a fraction of the population, the world would be an amazingly different place. It is easy to become more and more identified with the ego and all of its aspects, especially your thoughts and actions and the roles you play in life. As you become more solely identified with your ego, you become more anxious, afraid, and self-conscious. You become more and more of an individual self, but also more and more alone and isolated. You find yourself lost and confused in a world that is continually giving you contradictory and mixed messages about who and what you are. Especially confusing and disheartening are the conditional love messages that tell you, "I will love you if," and "I will love you because." As you learn and grow, you become more and more identified with this needy, wanting, and never satisfied part of yourself called the ego. You continue to think this is what you are, and you continue to lose more and more contact with that spiritual part of yourself. At the same time, your initial image of God as a loving and creative power living within you changes. God becomes this distant external force that judges and then punishes or rewards you. Your religious education misses the mark many times by teaching you that you have a soul, but never letting you know what a powerful force you have within yourself. You learn that you have a body and a soul. The body, of course, is usually a source of temptation and evil. Then there is this soul, this spiritual part of you and me, that no one can describe very well. Many of us learned our body would perish, but our soul would live for all eternity. Somehow, even though our soul was more essential than our body, our soul was still subject to our body's whims. Even though our body was not all that important, if we let our body's desires get out of control, then we could get our soul into a hell of a lot of trouble, literally. We were always told our soul was the most important part of us. Yet it somehow just stood by helplessly as our body and mind continued to mess up. Our soul might have been significant, but it seemed to have no power. We discovered we had all of these urges and desires, and most of them were directed towards something we had been told was bad or sinful. Our soul never seemed to be able to do anything about that stuff. Sure, it was wonderful and godlike and immortal, but it didn't have any influence. Our appetites or our urges or even other people's opinions were more powerful than our soul. Most of us never really learned about the infinite energy of spirit, so we continue to put our focus on the power of the ego. Remember, the ego thinks it is alone, and so it has to do everything. We live in a world where the ego thinks it is it. It thinks it is who you are.